Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from the streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked, where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and Talk Straight is an online format designed to help building families and communities reach a national audience. Weekly topics focus on real issues confronting families and communities. Yours truly, Reverend Dockery, is the host, and we engage experts and individuals in various disciplines, subject matters, as well as you, the listening audience, in provocative conversations. This show serves as a catalyst for sharing relevant information to our online community. Again, we welcome you for joining us tonight. We have a very special guest that will be on with us. The topic for tonight is, how do you save a drowning man? Many people feel as though the demands and expectations of society are simply overwhelming. In fact, they're drowning in society. Learning how to swim is not a standard lesson in public education. However, allegorically speaking, it is a must for navigating the sea of life in America and the world abroad. We're grateful to have with us a very special guest, Mr. Josiah Shelton, who holds a Bachelor's of Science in Psychology and who works as a human service counselor. And we're going to listen to him tonight. I believe he has years of experience in helping individuals who come to him on a regular basis with issues. But before we do that, we're going to have our regular monologue. If you're a new caller, you should know that the number for you to call in is 657-383-0944. We welcome your question, your comments throughout the next hour and a half or so. We only ask that you keep it relevant to our topic and that you be respectful to all of our participating callers online with us, on air with us. So again, without further ado, again, that number is 657-383-0944. We look forward to having some really wholesome dialogue with you tonight. And we're going to bring our guest in just a little bit, but for the next 10 to 15 minutes, we're going to engage in our monologue, and then we'll bring Mr. Shelton in to share with us his perspective on this topic. Again, that topic is, how do you save a drowning man? 2 Timothy, the 2nd chapter in the 15th verse reads, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Technically speaking, drowning is defined as a respiratory impairment resulting from being in or under a liquid. The most common outcomes are death or ongoing health problems. The process of drowning is quick and silent, although it may be preceded by distress, which is more visible. Generally, in the early stages of drowning, very little water enters the lungs. A small amount of water enters the trachea, causing a muscular spasm that seals the airway and prevents the passage of both air and water until ultimately unconsciousness occurs. This means a person drowning is unable to shout or call for help or seek attention. If they cannot obtain enough air without help, they are most likely to face an ultimate death. Allegorically speaking, when a person chronologically grows up in society, proper training and support to keep him or herself afloat socially, economically, emotionally, and even spiritually, he or she will likely find themselves drowning in the world around them. The older an individual becomes, the more society expects for them to be conscious and self-sufficient, thereby capable of keeping up with the norm and normal civic expectations of their culture. A chronologically grown adult who lacks proper social skills, proper training, economic autonomy, and mental stability is at risk to experiencing a spasm in the social airway of personal freedom. They're likely to choke when they face law enforcement, become suffocated by the demands to simply pay rent or provide food and clothing for themselves and even care for their offspring. Too often, the public welfare system becomes a false security blanket for too many. Ethical or even illegal means of meeting basic needs. There's an American psychologist by the name of Abraham Maslow, and he suggests that every healthy person desires to reach what he calls self-actualization. In layman terms, this simply means being happy to set and reach personal goals and a point of happiness or fulfillment in life. Unfortunately, far too many people in America, both young and old, are becoming drowned by the demands of society for them to be productive and self-sufficient as citizens. This most often is manifested via social protests, violence inflicted on one another, drug addiction, alcoholism, and untimely death, just to name a few. For a second, let us consider a story of a fellow by the name of James Edward Carr, well-known African-American rhythm and blues and soul singer, straight out of Mississippi. Let's listen to him just for a second, and then we'll bring our guest in.
Thank you.
you're pouring water on a drowning man. The number to call us live here, 657-383-0944. I'm happy now to introduce to you our special guest tonight, Mr. Josiah Shelton, who holds a Bachelor's of Science in Psychology and acts currently in the state system as a human services counselor. Good evening, sir. How you doing? Mr. Shelton?
Yes. Hello.
Okay, how you doing, sir? Okay, great.
I'm doing great.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. I trust you heard our monologue there, and you kind of have an idea of what we're talking about tonight.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Feel free to tell us a little bit about your background and as much as you can what you do and your education, and we'll kind of go from there.
Yes. I started out of my career in the military. I did 4 years of active duty service back in the late 80s. From there, I went to work at a law school. Did 4 years there, and I eventually came back to the state in which I'm in, and I'm working as a Department of Human Service social worker.
All right. Well, thank you
basically,
for your service. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just explain, as a social worker, I find a lot of people who feel like they're symbolically drowning. And they need help, they need assistance of all kinds. So I can kind of relate to the description that you mentioned earlier.
Okay. Well, we are grateful for you joining us tonight and being a part of the show. Let me introduce our regular panelists here, in-house panelists. Pastor Ricky Waller, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. Good evening. How you doing there, Pastor Dockery?
Great. Mr. Shelton, we have some other callers on with us, Brother Charles, I believe, and a gentleman by the name of Brother Outcast, who's been sharing with us. So they're going to be sharing that conversation. And, again, the phone lines are open here, 657-383-0944. Mr. Shelton, tell me a little bit about, now, you, as you mentioned, you are familiar with this, and that we're grateful that you're on the air tonight. Tell us a little bit about this idea of a drowning man and really, where's the hope? Let's begin from there. Where's the hope there?
Well, working in social service arena, you do tend to find people who are desperate. That is one of the signs of a drowning man, that he's desperate. He really can't see a way. And that's the first thing we try to get him to do, is to have hope. If you have hope, you can think. If you have to think, you have to try to be rational. Even though you're going down, if you sit back and think that if I can try to hold my breath, I will float to the top. Once you float to the top, then you can start looking around for saying, where's the nearest land? And there are services out there, and there are things that can help. It may seem like it's bleak. It may seem like things are hopeless. But at that point, you have to try to remain calm and prepare to think. And if you have hope, you can think. Because you say, I know I can get out of this. I know that I can take my way out of this situation.
Right.
And that's some of the services we provide in social services.
Okay. You know, often people feel guilty and feel as though they're less than because they need somebody to help them. You know, particularly in the African-American subculture, we tend not to want to go to a doctor or to a psychologist to work through or process some of our the issues that we face, because somehow it's a reflection that we're a bad person. What do you say about that?
I say that's true, and that's part of that lack of hope that people have. It's basically like giving up. You just don't think there's no way out, there's no sound way to go, and that you really don't have no choice. Too often we have choices, we just don't realize it.
Right. Pastor Waller, I know you were just recently on the local channel here in Nashville. You want to weigh in on that right quickly?
Say that again for me.
Would you like to weigh in on our conversation, our dialogue thus far?
Well, I was actually just listening in so I can kind of get a feel of, you know, where we're heading at.
Okay.
You know, I'm always open for good information, and I'm sure that that's what he's getting ready to bring forth. So I wanted to just kind of just get a good feel of what's really going on, man. And I'm gonna tune in just for a minute just to get that, if you will.
All right. No, I knew I was saying that you were recently on a local channel here in Nashville, and you were talking about Mr. Shelton. He has a book, and his book and the theme and the basic thesis of his book is to provide hope to those who were addicted and who feel hopeless. So maybe perhaps down the road there, Pastor Wall, you can chime in there with us. But
that's the reason why I wanted to kind of tune in, because the information that I have written in the book,
I'll take it.
As I shared on WBOL just yesterday, you know, they asked me to come on and share with the people, you know, the information that's valuable and what's needed. My book has it to offer, and as I humbly said that to them, this book is for those who don't know that they're in a trap. And then there are some that's not in the trap. This book is made for them to keep them from going into the trap. So it's a twofold way of bringing forth knowledge, and it's like an easy read. And the thing I'd like to share most about that is that a lot of people are in a world of addiction, and those addictions have overtaken us and have caused, as you said earlier, Pastor, destruction to flare up in many in many areas. You know, cause families to be separated in more ways than one. You know, like when they lock a person up, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to listen in for a little while longer. When they lock people up today, they're not only locking the person up, they're locking the people's family up who have to put money on their books and things like that, man. Because a lot of people have love for their family members, and they will go to any length to do that. You know, in spite of knowing that they serve you in prison, you know, 3 meals a day, I would say, and still they still have a tendency to, they're breaking it down maybe to, I don't know exactly, but just the thought of knowing what a person have to go through, man, to so in so many ways they're locking us down, locking our communities down. You know, first they can take the person off the street and then have them to send money to the prison, and then they take a percentage. You know, things like that, man. There's a whole lot of that going on. So I just wanted to let it be known, man. Expose the enemy. That's what it's called, exposing the enemy.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, very well. Outcast, go ahead, sir. Go ahead. You had something you wanted to
say. Coming up back of which the volume, I can't hardly hear. I'm trying to talk. My volume on my phone is up real loud, but I can hardly hear.
You can't hear me, or you can't hear us?
Just a little bit.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly how we can do that. I'll try to speak a little louder myself. But Sheldon, you still with us?
Oh yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
All right.
Just a gentleman that I want to respond to when he talk. Let me respond. Let him speak.
Go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I'm listening to the gentleman. Let him speak.
Oh, okay. All right, Mr. Shelton, it sounds like they want us to go ahead and move forward with our dialogue there. So having said that, let me pose the first question for tonight. And we're going to stop at the top of the hour and take a break and come back with the next section of the show. So, Mr. Shelton, when do you think you can identify when an individual is drowning in society? And this question is really not about a black man or white man, anyone. When do you identify when a person seems to be drowning in society?
Okay, well, the first sign to me that someone is really drowning, and talking about symbolic drowning, where they just feel there's no hope, they can't breathe. Like you said, you can't even have less air in to talk. And you need to be able to breathe to talk. When you can't talk, you can't communicate. All we see are behaviors, and we see behaviors that show that you're desperate. you see behaviors to show that you're just fiddling around, you're doing things that make no sense. That's one of the identifying signs of someone in that situation. I think of some of the most hopeless people I see on a daily basis, and I live here in the Chicago area, is homeless people. The majority of the homeless people I would identify as drowning individuals. For some reason or another, they've been kicked out the system. They lost their residence. They lost their home. They lost their family. They lost everything. And all too often, you find that those people, they don't communicate well. And one thing is that ability to speak, the ability to ask for help, the ability to identify with someone, have someone identify with you. So all too often, I sit there. I had one person come up to me the other day and ask for $1 for some food. He asked for food at such a social service agency where our job is to give out hundreds of dollars a month to each individual to get food, but he couldn't make that leap between going through the process of applying and getting the food. You don't even need a home to be eligible for the food. But for some reason or another, there's a disconnect between him and being able to do that, and that's the irrational thought process that I'm talking about. All too often, one of the first things you do in terms of being eligible by most states in the U.S. to get food stamps or SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, is to apply, and you need to have ID because you have to be a citizen to be eligible. And all too often, these people don't even have IDs and don't even know how to go about getting an identification card from the state.
Are we talking about children here, Mr. Chelsea? Are we talking about children?
I'm talking about primarily adults, grown adults.
Wow.
Mayor?
Sure, go ahead. Let's see if I don't entertain your question. Go ahead, or your comment. Go ahead.
Okay, here's my question. You have an able-bodied individual, able to work, but they want to stand out on the street, and they want to panhandle. Able-bodied. My question to whoever he is, because my phone is kind of low. I don't know connection. But should we be taxpaying citizens, taking care of able-bodied people? I'm 59 years old, and I work two jobs. Is it right for me to take up the bill for them to do nothing? And I'm 59 years old and have two jobs? That's the question from my point of view. Is it right or is it wrong if when you're talking about your panhandlers, people standing out on the streets, don't want a job? I'm 59 years old, and I work 7 days a week right now. Is it fair to me? Is it?
Well, I think that's a very good question.
I cannot hear you, sir. You're real low. Perhaps volume on your phone or something.
Hold on 1 second, Outcast. Let me see if we can help him. Joe, is it possible, Mr. Sheldon, for you to speak into your phone a little more directly so that we can hear your voice clear?
Sure, I can do that. Yeah, I got my volume on high. But I think that's a very good question in terms of trying to help out those who want to help themselves. Now, there's a big difference between that person asking for money and yourself or someone such as me. A lot of times, God helped those who help themselves. You have to use the spirit.
Yes,
you have to use the spirit of this discernment to figure out who really needs help and who's just out there trying to take advantage of a situation. Here where I am, you can go through a course of a day. You can run into a leaf. 4 or 5 people who are asking for a handout. The majority of times I don't give it to them. If I feel the discernment or the spirit that they might really need it, I might give it to them. Or I probably can't give them something. A lot of times I talk to them, ask them a few questions. If those answers that I get are not consistent with someone who seems like they're really down and out, I tell them I can't help you. All too often when they're at my place of work, I tell them, man, if you go 20 feet, go through that door, you can start getting food for the rest of your life. All you have to do is qualify and go through the procedures.
Okay.
You know, now I hear some who are not really serious about it. Oh, I don't want to go through that process. I don't need to do that. You know, if you can't think enough of yourself to have a wherewithal to go in there and go through the steps when someone is trying to help you eat, you're probably really not very hungry. I can promise you that. Either you got another way out, or you definitely don't need my help if you won't even do the things or take the steps that's necessary to become self-sufficient. Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of people out there. I'm sorry.
Go ahead and finish your thought. He's going to ask nothing. Go ahead and finish your thought, Mr.
No, I agree. There are a lot of people that try to take advantage of the situation in terms of just being good Christians and being charitable. Now, you know, a lot of people don't have hope. There's a lot of people who are mentally ill. Those people, I don't know how much good it would be to give them money, because a lot of times they use their money to buy liquor, drugs, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we have to use a sense of discernment to figure out who really needs their help. But if you talk to them even for a few seconds, you can kind of get an idea.
Uh-oh. Look like we lost him.
Yeah, you lost him. But I say this. I'm 59 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can work two jobs and work 50 or 60 hours a week, I see somebody panhandling, give them nothing.
Okay.
Because I'm an elderly man myself, if they want to look at it like that.
Okay.
When I go to the fair, I get a discount because of my age. I take that.
We're going to try to get Mr. Sheldon back, but let me just chime in with Brother Charles and Pastor Wallen and see what their view is.
Okay, good. Yeah, let me hear Brother Charles.
All right. But, Charles, what do you think about that, man? Have you followed our discourse so far?
Yeah, we're talking about like the people who stand around who are able bodies.
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about.
I mean, you got to have that deserve, I feel like. That. Yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, I kind of get a vibe about them, you know, if they out there legit and they really try it and they got a situation. But I don't want to say I'm out there every day, every year doing the same thing. Then I kind of really trust them. They're trying to do something. Like they out there for a couple of weeks. They doing what they got to do and they get out of the situation. Then, you know what, I support it. But if you out there on a regular, that's your everyday routine and you don't have no plan of trying, I mean, you can't have people for denying you. You know, you can't do that to yourself. You kind of lose faith in people sometimes.
Yeah. That makes sense. Pastor Waller, what do you think? Pastor Waller, what do you think?
What I say about that is that the Bible says that if a man don't work, he doesn't eat. Now, that's what the Word of God said. But let me talk about the Word of God, and then let me talk about that people don't know what the Word of God says. You know, I look at when I didn't know what the Word of God said, and I think about the type of work that I was doing, you know, and the harm that I was bringing, I'm trying to distinguish between the two. I often go to a store that's very, very, very popular in the city of Nashville, and it's on 18th and Jefferson.
Okay.
I don't go to many of the stores, but this is because I'd be in the streets. And there's a store, and I mean, you find people, men and women, standing out asking for quarter nickels and dimes and dollars, and let me open the door for you, let me wipe your tire off, let me wipe your window off, things like that. And they're faithful at what they are doing. Now, to me, that's work. Be able to be out there that long and to ask people and to have no shame. And some people get upset. Some people, you know, walk out and give them the change. You know, I've seen a lot of that going on, man. And my heart goes out to them people because I think that's where the compassion come in at for me is that I look at the Word of God today and it says for me to consider myself being in that condition. You know? But what would be wrong with a person spending that type of energy, 3 or 4 hours on a job, getting paid X amount of dollars? I think they're very good at what they do. you know, to be able to stand there and ask a person, you know, be willing to do the work, but yet still won't go and clock in. And I believe it's because of the addiction of what they're getting the money for. Most people are not what they're getting out. Some people say they're hungry.
Nothing.
Some people say they're hungry, but they're not. You know,
yeah,
I see a guy know how to rub his stomach. When he walk up to you, he rubs his stomach and put his hand together and say, please, would you give me? No, I'm saying, this is what I see. I'm telling you, I'm experiencing this, and I know where they're coming from. They're trying to not to get a sandwich, you know, because I get a lot of food a lot of time, and I have food to give away. And I'm trying to say, you're hungry? I said, okay, give me again some food. He said, no, I was going to get me some down the street, you know. So what is he saying? what is that person saying?
Good.
That person is saying, I want something other than some food, but I'm going to tell you I want some food. So I hear you what Outkast is saying, and then you have folks that are really actually hungry, that I don't want no money, I really want some chicken, I want this and that and other. So it's really, man, it's amazing that's going on.
Yeah.
And
hold that thought, Pastor.
Okay.
I got Mr. Sheldon.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Sheldon, you've been following the dialogue here. What say you? And then we're gonna need to go to a quick break here.
He's right. We're talking about homeless people, but I have people who are working and who are still trying to beat the system. Now, little they know that the system is going to wind up beating them. I spoke to one lady just today. She has 9 people in her family. She calls in and complains about the amount of benefits she's receiving. She's only receiving $150 worth of food stamps with 9 people. That's not enough. $150 is not enough to feed 9 people. I understand that. But she's making all
food
this money. She's working.
Man, I wish I could get some food stamps. They give me nothing.
Hold on now, Kevin.
I can't get
no
food stamps.
All right. Hold on.
Well, you have
to
be eligible. It's based on your income, and that's the point I'm making. On the income, that's all they deemed that she needed was $150 based on the income she had. She called in and said she wasn't working, hadn't worked in 5 months, and it was clear as day on the computer screen what exactly to the dollar what she was making.
What's the dollar amount? See, you talking, and you're trying to defend them, but $725, give it to
them. Okay, hold on 1 second. Let them finish, and then we'll hear from you. Let them finish your thought, then we'll hear from you. Let's have a dialogue. All right, go ahead, Ms.
I'm not defending her by no means. My point is, I went to the computer trying to figure out what she made in the last 30 days, which is what we look at. It did not verify that for me. So I took that income out for her. She's going to get $900 in food stamps. But I explained to her, no uncertain terms. You can take this money, and if you're not working, that's fine. If you are, they're going to find out, and it's going to catch up to you. And when you really need that help, guess what? They're going to confiscate your income tax refund. Any money that you get from somebody dying, they're going to mess up your credit because they're going to wind up doing a recovery effort on you in terms of the income. And you ask yourself, is that really worth it? So if you're not working, that's fine. I'm going to take your word for it because at that point, I couldn't see what she got in the last 30 days.
Okay.
I'm not working. I know she's lying because I did see income up to a certain period, but I couldn't see it for the last 30 days.
Right.
So now this woman went drowning, but she's succumbing to the influences of what causes a person to wind up become, you know, in dire situations. Because all that stuff surely hits you at the wrong time. I'm going to say this one last point, and I let somebody else take the floor. I know a guy, a single guy. He's in his 40s. He had worked for a while. He got unemployment. He went back. He collected unemployment and continued to work. So once he did lose that job, he went back to apply for unemployment. They told him, oh, no, you also overpaid it. And ironically, the only thing he had left was his food stamps or SNAP. And as it turns out, he wound up owing money on the SNAP. So when he really needed them food stamps, he couldn't get them. So, you know, of course he wanted sympathy with someone to feel bad for him because, you know, all this is coming down on me all at one time. But, you know, these factors that cause you to continue to feel like you can't breathe, a lot of time they're self-produced.
Okay.
You know, that's the situation. You made it, man.
Let me Outkast for a second,
state,
Michelle.
Do he live in? With all the information, what city and state do he live in?
With Mr. Shelton, you mean?
In,
go ahead, Mr. Shelton. Go ahead.
Yeah, I live in Chicago, Illinois. I live in a major metropolitan area.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. You see these people every day.
I don't know if you...
Yeah,
live,
you got Jesse... No. You got Jesse Jackson come out of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now. Hey, it's wrong.
Outkast. Let me explain. I don't know if you heard the intro, but Mr. Shelton works as a human service counselor in the Chicago area. And so he deals with people on a daily basis who appear to be drowning in society. And so he's sharing his experience with us tonight. So he's not just talking about what he's heard. He's talking about what he does on a daily basis for some years now. But what was your question, Outkast?
Barack Obama, Jesse Jackson.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Chicago. You know, I lived there for, you know, short period of time.
Okay.
You got Jesse Jackson. You got Barack Obama. He hailed from there. Jesse Jackson.
Okay.
I mean, people come up, they talk, but what are they doing for the people in Chicago, Illinois? I say nothing. Nothing.
Okay. And that's another conversation, Outkast. Tonight, we're trying to figure out how to save a drowning man. I hear what you're saying clearly.
You save a drowning man?
Yes, sir.
Look,
that's what
the one to have sense, leave Chicago, Illinois, go south. Young men and women, leave Chicago, go back south. Don't go west.
Right.
Don't go north.
Well, now, I'm not, I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure that everybody in Chicago not bad and everybody's not drowning. Everybody in Nashville is not bad. Everybody's not drowning in Nashville and other parts of
the
country.
Yeah,
but
I
we
agree.
Do see, we do see where there is a concern and an issue where all across America, there are individuals who are drowning every day. Many of them won't help. They don't know how to ask for the help, and many of them are ashamed to accept the help that's available to them. Now then, as Mr. Sheldon was pointing out, there are people who are just hustlers who are trying to get over, running game, and they make it bad for the people who really need help, and that's another issue. Let me do this. Let me go to this brief break, and then when we come back, Mr. Sheldon, I do want to pose another question to you and the rest of the listening panel tonight. So we'll be right back after this.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfc bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series. Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time I's been a-climbing on and reaching ladders and turning corners, sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set on the steps, 'cause you find it's kinda hard. Don't you fall now, for I still going, honey. I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. Our special guest tonight is Mr. Josiah Shelton, who holds a bachelor's degree in science and psychology and currently serves as a human services counselor. And he's sharing with us a little bit of his experience. And we're talking tonight from the topic, How Do You Save a Drowning Man? The number is 657-330-944. Pastor Wallace with us again tonight. Brother Outcast and Brother Charles, you're free to call us. We ask that you only keep it relevant to our topic for tonight and be respectful. Share your opinion, and we want to hear it and entertain your questions. Having said that, we're back now. Mr. Shelton, I do want to pose this question to you, and we can flow with the next segment of the show from here. Okay, we talked about identifying when a person is drowning, a man is drowning. Should you find that
right.
you are the only person capable of saving that man from drowning, however, he fights your efforts to save him, should you leave him to drown, or do you save him? Ms. Sheldon.
Well, that's a good question, but let me address the comments made by the brother a few minutes ago. He
okay.
talked about Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He talked about Barack Obama. He talked about Jesse Jackson. Jesse
right.
Jackson and Barack Obama represent a system. They work within the system. The system is designed to keep our people drowning. The system is designed to only let so many or so few reach
wow.
the top. And
okay.
in order to operate in the system, you have to be aware of the system and know how the system works. And by
okay.
exclusion, by keeping people out, keeping people uneducated, keeping people homeless, keeping people doing things that are illegal, you're never going to make it in the system.
Give it up.
He made me think about one brother who came to Chicago. This guy came from Atlanta, Georgia. He was so desperate.
Wow.
To get any kind of help. He met some family that he heard about here in Chicago. He came up, I saw him sitting at my desk, saying that he was hungry, he needed some food stamps. And I asked his brother, I said, man, why did you come up here when you was down south? Man, I had nobody to rely on. I heard I had family in Chicago. I came up to be with my family. He came up here to Chicago and found out that his family didn't provide any more support. In fact, they provided less than the family he had in Atlanta, Georgia. But, you know, there are people out there struggling, and there's people willing to travel and go any place to try to fit in.
Okay.
But the sad reality is, unless you have a strategy,
Hold on.
Or you have a way to try to survive, you're not going to make it. It's designed to keep people down, keep them hopeless, and basically keep them drowning. That's the whole nature of the business. Donald Trump, he talks about all his rich friends as billionaire friends. From his perspective, you all are doing just fine drowning. That's the whole idea, is to keep people struggling and doing things at a bare minimum where they don't have time to reach Abraham Maslow's self-actualization. Where you can step back and stop thinking about how I'm going to eat tomorrow or how I'm going to pay my rent. You're so busy doing that, you don't have time to address the bigger issues.
Right.
He makes a good point. Trying to go down south might be good, but if you go down there, you need to have a plan. You need to be able to talk. You need to be able to conversate. You need to know how you're going to make it. If you don't, you need some really strong faith. Some people say that faith is hope. You need some plan. You need some desire, some drive in you to sit there and try to overcome all these natural obstacles that this system that we live in America is predicated on, which is built upon.
Wow.
Yeah. So you ask the question, would you try to save someone if you're the only one who can save them? The problem is, would I go out, swim out to try to save somebody if I know they're 300 pounds and they're struggling, they're pulling me down, and I find myself getting weaker and weaker? And at some point, I know I can either save myself or try to let both of us go down. The natural answer for me would be to let the brother go. I'm so sorry. But at this point, it's not about you anymore. It's about me. Because I know I can't help you. And if I can't help you, then I need to try to save myself.
Too often,
you know, with family members, friends, cousins, you try to reach out there, try to pull them. But a lot of times, in that quicksand that they're in, where they're constantly going down, you find that you don't have a grasp or anchor to hold on to. So if you do what you can for your people, the best you can. Yeah, but you got to try to save. You first save yourself in order to take care of the others that are relying on you. So you do what you can. That's all you can do.
I have an interesting perspective on that, but Outkast is chopping at the bit to say something. Go ahead, Outkast. What were you going to do? You had a question for me. You going to say something?
At the end of the day, from north to the south, to the east, to the west, we help one another. Chicago. Mm-hmm. I can go beyond that. If I may speak, young men know the truth. I'm just the old man talking.
You like the way you talk.
He know the truth. Each one help one, from the north, from the south to the east to the west, and I'm gonna take it back down to slavery. The Negroes up north always have had their freedom, but when you come down south, nothing. Mm-hmm. When I go back up north, I get nothing. This is what the South teaches. Each one teach one. This is what it is. All these excuses, Negroes up south, going up north, Negroes up north, they supposed to do better than Negroes down south. What's the problem?
Well,
Negroes up north always had the freedom.
Hold on one second. Let's look at it from a historical perspective. It is true that prior to 1865, really 1863 by executive order of President Lincoln, the northern states were typically free when they were across the Mason-Dixon line. Missouri, the state of Missouri, is a good case study. However, after 1865, when 34 states ratified the Constitution to make slavery illegal, it ended it. And supposedly, everyone in America now has those rights. We talked about this in the show. The 14th Amendment gave them human rights. The 15th Amendment gave them suffrage or voting rights, right? So there are a series of constitutional amendments that change the political and even the social plight. But I think the theme here is, and specifically talking about saving a drowning man, the man has to want to help himself. He's got to cooperate.
Negroes up north. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you, sir. He has to be willing to cooperate and participate in his own salvation. In fact, the Apostle Paul teaches that you have to work out your own soul salvation with fear and trembling. This idea that it just pops out of the sky and you have nothing to do and it's someone else's responsibility to do for you, it's not a realistic thought at all. But so I think that's a very – go ahead, Outcast. Go ahead.
At the end of the day, them Negroes up north, they were supposed to be coming down bringing salvation to the south. What they do? They want to sell drugs.
No, which Negroes are you talking
down their butts.
Which, who are you speaking of specifically?
Mr. Dockery, if I can address some of that.
Let him talk.
Go ahead.
Well, and he talks about the Negroes up north and the Negroes up south. But what I think we need to shine the light on is the culture, the civilization that we live in today, and what's being taught by those in control. I can promise you, the Negroes up south and the Negroes up north don't do any more than the system allows them to do. And a lot of times they design that. And you know how they do that? They do that by setting up a system where you can't operate unless you get permission from them. People here in Chicago selling drugs.
Permission?
I can promise you.
No, I'm America. Permission? You fight for your rights, bruh.
Hold on.
Right.
One second.
I'm talking about in Chicago now.
All the drugs are being sold here.
All the crime. Believe me, if they want to put a clamp down on this, they want to stop it, I promise you they could, if they really wanted to.
One second.
But that's not the system.
Michelle, give me one second, please. Blaukes, let's let him finish. Let's hear him out, and then if we have a comment or question about him, we'll come back. Let's hear him out first. I'm sorry, Mr. Sheldon.
Good.
Well, that's all right. The brother's asking some good questions. I mean, he's asking some relevant points. But the bigger point I'm getting at. This is a system we live in. This system is designed for decades, if not for hundreds of years. They started with the Black Code back in the 1800s, once you got your freedom, they taught you how to control you. They have Black Codes today, to this very day, in terms of what the laws are, what you can and what you can't do. One of the things they do, and they do that through the media, is they pit one black man against another black man. Competition, you know, sports is a good thing. Being athletic, being the top dog is one of the things.
Oh, that's true. White men against white men. That's true.
Okay.
White men pitch black men against other black men. We don't identify ourselves like we did back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. There's another brother, another black man trying to make it. And if you make it, I make it. That's not the concept now. And all that is through advertising. All that is through one-upmanship in terms of you have to be the best. I have to have the best house, the biggest car, this and that. Never mind the rest of my extended family, other black people in the neighborhood who's going through the same thing I am. We're constantly fighting against one another, trying to make it in terms of trying to be the top dog. I never understood the concept of how the drug man became the neighborhood hero. How can you sleep at night and you selling drugs to your brothers and sisters just so you can have a better house, a better car, or have more money? How can you say my kids wear these $300 gym shoes, your kids wear no shoes, and I'd rather kill your kids and get them addicted to drugs just so I can do that? It's at that point that they say that my success has independent of yours has nothing to do with your success. Little do they know that the bigger system has designed it that way to keep one another fighting each other, whether they're in the north or whether they're in the south. We don't identify with one another. That's one of the biggest problems.
Okay. So, Mr. Sheldon, if you don't mind, let me bring Pastor Wally in on it because I think you tapped on something that I think you tapped on something that is certainly I know is relevant to him. Pastor Wall, you heard that. How do you would you respond to that briefly?
Yeah, let me just, if you will, just tap into the big man's question that was asked about helping the drowning man.
Right.
I was having meditating on the thought of that. You know, what do when we see a drowning man? Should we let him continue to drown, knowing that there's still hope?
Right.
Letting the man drown versus saying, "Well, hey, it's all about me now." You know, since you're trying to help him, because if I do that, I'm going to mess around and drown myself.
Mm.
And I was, you know, that thought, man. And it's like, you know, when I look at the situation, I have been that drowning man.
Ah.
And I'm thinking about the power of one in me as a drowning man without using the concept as you're using. But I actually was a drowning man, man. But there was a man came out and extended help to me, even though it took a little while to reel me in. It took a little while to reel me in. But guess what? It worked. He didn't give up on me. And that's what I would like to say, you know, when it comes down. I'd like to consider myself being a drowning man and that hope and someone can. As I heard you speak not long ago, so you said something about tying the knot on the rope. Where not just having a rope thrown, they say, here, grab this rope, but there's nothing to hold on to.
Okay.
But when you got good information on the rope and you shared with them about where they're hiring at and how you present it to them, then just maybe that person may turn around, and that's the possibility that is there.
Wow.
And I would say that because of faith. You know, the word says, now faith is the substance of things hoped, evidence of things not seen. There are some people out there probably crying out, the homeless people, as I heard Brother Shelton talking about earlier, that probably seeking, you know what I mean, a way to come out of that position, because that's a hopeless and a powerless position to be in. We're talking about homeless, you know, and then deep down inside of them, they have faith also. You see, God have dealt to every man a measure of faith, even though the person may not know it. When you have a measure of faith, that means you have something. You see, and now think about that, man. You know, it just gave me joy to know that, man, I was that man, man, that was drowning. And thank God for that.
Negroes of Noah.
They did give up on me, you know, and so I just want to encourage those that are tuned in to know that if you know someone that's drowning, don't give up on them, because they may not know that the scriptures say a man doesn't eat unless he works, or vice versa, a man don't work, he doesn't eat, you see, and they just may be out there going for what they know and got caught up into the trap and just get comfortable with being miserable, man. I mean, it's a miserable thing to I talk to a lot of guys that sleep outdoors and, you know, sleep on the bus stop. I talk to some of those guys, and they're saying, but you know what they do have, brother? Man, they have big-time faith, man. I'm telling you the truth, brother. I have talked to some, man, big-time faith, and they will work, man.
Am I hearing you suggest that despite their submergence, and symbolically, this liquid of that potentially can take them out, there's hope for them? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Yes, sir, man. Okay. I've seen one. I'm gonna take this. I'm glad you brought that up. I've seen a lady. She knew how to open the door at that same store years ago that I was talking about is a popular store in the city.
Wow.
Where they used to want to do. This lady, man, used to open the door for people. I mean, she would make it known how she would see people getting ready to get out of their car. She would be already posted up at the door, and she'd swing that door open for them to go in and swing it open for them to come out. And years went by, man. This lady became a doorkeeper at the church in East Mansfield, man. She became a doorkeeper, usher. And, I mean, I can only imagine how she was going to be swinging that door in and out and open. Because when I walked through that door, man, and seeing her standing at the door, man, you're talking about a joy. I've always encouraged her. I never put her down while she was doing that. Girl, stop opening that door for people. Don't you keep asking them people for money. I just kept doing what I was doing. See, the word says, let your light so shine before men that they would see your goodness and glory.
Wow.
See, while I was showing up, she was getting strength while she was pulling that door open. And all of a sudden,
okay.
God gave me a chance to see the fruit of my labor.
Grown Negroes of North.
Man, that was amazing, man. I just you said that. That is hope for those, man. You never know who's going to change you, brother.
Okay.
So I just think he's part about it. You know, shouldn't give up on them because I don't know whether they're going to change or not. I mean, my job is to just to reach out and try to help someone. And sometimes it's just don't change quick enough, you know.
Pastor, if you don't mind, let me see if Brother Charles has been listening quite tentatively. Let me see if he has any input that he want to enter into the conversation here, and then we'll go back to Ms. Shelton. Go ahead, Brother Charles. You have anything you want to say?
I just want to hear the gentleman still speak on how they do in Chicago, because it is set up for, like, it's a system that's, you know, strategically targeting these situations, and I want to hear more about that, and, like, what's going on so we can prevent some things.
Oh, great. Did you hear that, Ms. Shelton? He was saying that he
would like to hear more about
how you can counteract the systematic processes that keep people locked up and keep them drowning and things of that. Can you speak to that a little bit more, please?
Absolutely. I just want to say the minister made a great point. I mean, he's trying to let his light shine. He's trying to share the hope that he has with others. When you're drowning, you're looking for a lifeline. You're looking for anything, a sign, anything to give you some encouragement. You know, just by way of example, I talked to a brother today. This guy's about 40. He said he went into a coma for 13 days. He didn't even know he had medical benefits with the state owner. I said, man, you got medical. You had medical for the past year. Oh, I do? I said, yeah, if you need to go to the doctor, you can do it. He said that he's been out of work since he had that coma. He fell into a coma for 13 days. Right now he's applying for SSI. And all he needed was somebody to give him a little encouragement, just a little hope. I said, man, you got a medical card. I'm going to put one in the mail for you today. You can use this, and you can try to get the help you need. He told me, yeah, brother, I would like to get a job. My memory is not what it used to be because I had that brain damage. But if you can just share a little bit of that hope that you got, if you can let them know that God is able, let them know that there's somebody out there who cares, that can make all the difference in the world. Now, granted, we all live in a system designed to keep the black man down, to keep us on the foot. If you have a little bit of hope, you can use that hope as a lifeline, as a rope, to get you to hold yourself up enough to sit there and think about my situation and what can I do to make my situation better. So whether you're up north, whether you're down south, if you have a few people who care, a few people who give you that light, a few people willing to support you, you can have some hope. And the more hope you get, guess what? The better you think it's going to be in terms of how to get out of this situation.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Wow.
Does that make sense, Charles?
It makes perfect sense. You know,
Ms. Shelton, one of the things we've been talking about on our various episodes is really how we get young men who are at the brink of giving up. And one of the reasons they are so volatile is because they have lost faith and confidence in people like preachers and politicians and supposed leaders. Nobody's really taught them how to navigate life, how to establish themselves, how to be independent and self-sufficient. We were just talking about Brother Charles and another gentleman that was on with us who started their own businesses and stepping outside the box and doing something that at one point they can reach Maslow's point of self-actualization. That's really the focus of the show. We want to encourage individuals. So if you will, I do have one last question I want you to address, Mr. Shelton, and we'll open it up to the rest of the panel here. But if you will, briefly, can you reiterate a little bit about there are a lot of people who don't believe in the system, don't believe in government. We've talked about that as well before. How do you live within the government and position yourself in such a way that you don't become a victim of that government, but a victor within it? Ms. Shelton, if you will.
Well, first I want to address one of the bigger issues. I mean, it started back in the 70s. Everybody watched the show about
no,
the little nerd?
No, it's out. S-O-U-T-A.
Go ahead, Michelle.
O-U-T-A?
Go ahead,
yeah,
Michelle.
Everyone talked about, find me a man, find me a leader. Part of the system thing is to take the man out of the household, to separate their family structure where they have someone to look up to. There are so many kids in Chicago, all around the world, don't have a male symbol to look up to. They don't have an example of what a man should be. They don't have anything to look to give them hope in terms of this is how I'm supposed to behave, this is how I'm supposed to act. All too often, you are out there in a single-family home. Your mom don't have a lot of money. Your mother can't provide for you. Your mother's frustrated. She's screaming her head out. She kept telling you, son, I'm trying to take the best I can, and she don't know herself. So all talking, when you come up, it becomes a dog-eat-dog mentality. It's a matter of trying to do what I can, forget everybody else, including my brother, even though you should be your brother's keeper. You're thinking of yourself. One good way to try to get in the system is to find those people like the minister was talking about. Someone's willing to extend a hand in terms of, brother, I don't have much, you don't have much, but the right thing to do is try to show you the way, show you how I'm doing it. The best example possibly out there is to try to be an example yourself. And be willing to lend a hand. Be willing to share some experiences. There are so many kids out there wish they had a father in the home. Someone said, just give me a little guidance, a little leadership. If we can do that, if we can just at least try to be a light to the young men out there, an example, someone who can sit there and be someone they can say, wow, I admire what he's doing. And I don't mind because he got this big car, he has a big house, he's got five guns in his house, he holds down a corner. Someone like that would be a light. And, you know, and that light can touch another light, which would touch another light. That's probably our best chance of trying to get out of this. It's part of being aware of what's going on. But in terms of leadership, in terms of a male example, someone to say, this is somebody I can pride of myself after, it would take you a long way.
Right.
And basically all that's doing is giving you that oxygen that a drowning man would need in terms of being able to breathe. If you can breathe, you can think. If you can say, if I can just do what this guy's doing, if I can hold down a job with for my wife and my three kids, like this guy's doing right here, I can do that too. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I can do it because he's doing it. That's the best we can do these days. Try to be an example to our brother in terms of what the example should be of what a black man is in a culture that's designed to keep you down.
Wow. Well, I think Pastor Waller would agree with the text that says, after thou art converted. What did it say, Pastor? Then what?
It says, strengthen your brother. That's what it says. You know what I mean? So that's why I don't never forget where I came. I have to consider I was that drowning man. So I can't help but to say,
that's right.
Man, I have to always remember what the word says and said that you said, Pastor, you know, say after you have been converted. It didn't say before, you know, because I couldn't help myself. But when I got a chance to put it in perspective, it says, we being who are strong, all to help the infirmity of the weak and not to please ourselves. And so that made me aware that I was a drowning man, but now I got strength to be able to help somebody else that's drowning. So I can't say and determine who it is, a homeless man or a person that's out there caught up, you know, because a person on drugs right now that's captured, that person is homeless to me, you know. That was me. I might want to stay home. I need to stay home. It's drugs. Don't make, get up and get out there and get it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's
amazing.
Okay.
All right. We got
drowning. And I can promise you that minister has somebody who's a light to him, who's an example, who has inspired him with hope and gave him the chance to say, I can do better than what I'm doing.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's such a regret that our young men today don't have much to look for. We look at images on TV. Most of the guys are gay. Most of the guys, they're gangbangers. Most of the guys there, they're going to jail. You see people, on pictures. You know, they think it's acceptable to have a criminal record. You know, it's just an example. Somebody to be a light. Somebody to just give me a little hope to say, we can make it.
Okay. Wow. Okay, gentlemen. So that brought us to this point. Now, I'm a last question for you, Mr. Sheldon, and then let's open up to the panel as well. You done decided that, okay, that's my brother. I can't just walk away from him. I got to save him by any means necessary. But he's still clowning, still cutting up, right? And he's going to put both of y'all at risk of drowning. What you do to save him? I'm going to answer that question, too, when y'all get through. But what do y'all think you do to save him? He's still clowning now. You said, okay, I ain't going to leave you out there by yourself. I'm going to go on, even though I know you're wrong, I'm going to come out and try to help you. What do you do then? What do you do? Michelle, lead us off.
What I would say to that brother is, brother, you're in trouble. You may not know it. I don't know if you understand it, but let me try to help you understand the situation you're in. I would love to sit there and pull you out myself. I'm doing the best I can reaching my hand out to you. You've got to come to the point to, with that understanding, do the best you can. If you do that, if you make one step, God will make two. If you make half a step, I'm going to make a step for you too. But that awareness that you're in a dire situation and change is going to need it. Change is needed. You know, all you can do is stand that brother, try to make him aware. You know, you try to put that hand out. You keep putting that hand out as far as you can. Your brother, you're fading. Okay. Brother, you're going fast. You know, this is your last opportunity. This is something you may want to latch on to. All you can do is have the brother go down. At least he when he went down, he knows he's going down. And he had that opportunity to try to grab that last bit of hope or to do something to try to point him in the right direction.
Yes.
That's about all you can do.
Okay. All right. Pastor, you want to weigh in on that, Doc? I'm going to answer that question for Charles before we leave tonight because I know he want to know the answer to that one. Pastor, you want to weigh in on that right quick?
Well, I think Mr. Shepton said it very well, man. And when you're talking about someone, you don't force no one to be saved from drowning, but you do continue to reach out, and that's the thing that you know. Now, I don't know in many areas what a drowning man is except my experience. And so what I would always say is to while the person is yet without reaching out like a person who have you in a headlock and you're in a wrestling and you have someone that's reaching out so you can tag them so they can help you. And it'd be up to you. Now, I'm saying to you, brother, you still have time. And all I'm doing is doing what I was asked to do, and that is to make sure that I don't forget where I came from, so I'm still reaching out to you. Now, if you tag me, then that means your help showed up. But if you refuse to tag me, that means that you say, I don't need your help. And that means that there's nothing else that I'm left to do other than to say, I was there for you. I shared with you what I was capable of doing. I said, I made a tag one day, and my help showed up. And so that's what I believe a person would do, you know what I mean, with a drowning man in many areas, whether he need a job and or they're flying over here or just something to make him realize that he came to himself. I'm a drowning man. You know what I mean? And now, you know, that's my component. You know, that's coming to oneself, man. You know, is what it's all about. So when you make a tag, brother, when you tag somebody to help you, automatically you'll come to yourself and realize that, hey, man, change is possible. It can be accomplished.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
What about it, y'all? I'm going to answer those questions, y'all, but let me hear from you right quick.
You're real. I'm listening.
Okay. All right. Well, gentlemen, Michelle, I appreciate you eloquently sharing that information. And, Pastor, y'all tag-teaming off each other. Y'all vibing off each other tonight. But let me just offer a response to each of the questions we posed. And the first one being, when do you know a man is drowning in society? Well, when an individual slips so deep, Pastor, into dismay and demise in their personal life and affairs, that's the greatest indication that they're drowning and they need help. I like the way Mr. Shelton phrased it. You don't know you need help, brother, but you do. All right? The second question was, should you find that you're the only person capable of saving that man from drowning. However, he's fighting you, and your efforts to save him, should you leave him to drown or save him? Well, sometimes, gentlemen, even our own relatives are so self-destructive in their actions that we want to get out of their way so they don't kill us. We want to look out for our own safety. But out of the love of family and humanity, we got to stick around and get and not give up on them. Sometimes we're the only salvation they may have. But watch this, Charles. That brings us to the last question then. You done decided you're going to help him, save his life, but he's still clowning, cutting up, acting a monkey, right? Putting both of you at risk to drown. What do you do? Well, as simple as this, Charles. In the name of love and Jesus himself, knock him smooth out and let him thank you on the other side of safety. That's what you do for him. Some of us need our tail whipped, brother. And if we love you enough, that's what our daddy used to say, I'm whooping you because I love you. If you love him, you're Jesus, even the Bible said God chastened those whom he loves. Is that right, Pastor?
Yes, sir. Without a doubt.
You know, if you see your brother in error, you should correct him.
Yeah, that's, if what, you love that's him. What he said. That's if you love him now. Because he
if
said,
you
the
love
Lord
him.
Love him. That's sad, you know what I mean? He chasing
that's
him
right.
And everything. You know, that's just a really good correction, you know. Correction is good for you. You know, sometimes
absolutely.
They just don't know, man. And when they know, you know, they can't do it if they don't know. But once they learn, brother, I tell you, it's amazing what a person can do when they see somebody reaching out to them. When I saw that lady, man, out there at that church, brother, on the door, man, I said, just thank you. If I had gave up on her, man, and she would have said, I remember when you used to give up on me when I was at the store, you know, but she didn't say that. She was just as joyful and thanking me for what I had done and the example that I was setting out there. I never put him down and things like that, too. So you got to always be mindful of that, man. You never know who's going to change.
Right, right.
Concerning
a
drowning person.
Here's what I find, Mr. Sheldon and gentlemen on the panel. Today it's not politically correct to tell folks the truth. Now, if you see me throw up from the floor, Charles, I really hope you'll tap me on the shoulder at least say, hey, man, you need to go get yourself together, brother. You ain't looking good right now. In fact, when you ain't looking good, excuse my English, I'm not looking good because you my brother. I care about you. That's why I'm stopping you and telling you about it. But we've gotten to a point now where, as I think Mr. Sheldon spoke of this earlier, I'm only looking out for me right now, and I really don't care what's going on with you as long as I'm good. Well, the truth of the matter is one day you tied to the same hitch and you're in that same boat. When he drowned, you drowned. Both of y'all going together. Both of y'all wind up going together. So the hope is in – say that again, Outcast. Okay, he left us there. The hope is in the unity. And I think that's what I was hearing Brother Sheldon say, that we've got to, I say we, I'm specifically talking about African-American people, we've got to get back to a point where we do seek to be more unified with one another. And I believe if we get it right within ourselves, we can bring our white brothers and sisters along with us as well, and we can be more unified on a lot of things. You were going to say something, Brother Sheldon?
No, I just agree with what you're saying, sir. All too often, we don't have that unity. We don't have that sense of family. You know, it used to be the extended family in the black neighborhood was the old block. You get in trouble, you get a spanking from the person that saw you, you get a spanking from the neighbor who saw what you did, and then they went and told your parents and you got another spanking. That don't happen anymore. We're not our brother's keepers anymore. We're not... responsible for my neighbor's child down there in terms of what he's doing. By the same token, in terms of just getting a spanking, they will help you out. That's so-and-so's boy. That's this and that. He should be doing that. Let me go talk to him because I know his parents would want me to talk to him just like I want them to talk to my children if they're doing something wrong. It's that unity, you know, that we need. But, you know, divisiveness is part of the system in terms of keeping us down and keeping us in the same situation. I'm better off than you because I got a job, you don't have a job. I'm better off than you because I live on the corner block house, and you live on that small house at the corner. The thing is, we need to try to put all those up. You know, blacks only represent 10% of the population here in America. You know, Hispanics are quickly outgrowing us. But I can promise you, you find Hispanics who have 20 people living in one house here in Chicago. We have Hispanics here who own buildings because they got enough. They got 15 people in there, and 12 of them are working, and they buy that one house to give it to one of them. They take the other 11 people out, and they go buy a house for the next person. They help each other out. They have some type of unity. You know,
right.
I know your cousin's brother, sister, but you still my family. Come on in. You can stay with me while you get your legal job making sub-minimum wages, but we're getting paid in cash, and we're going to use this cash to pull the next one up.
Wow.
I've seen situations where Hispanics go buy a house for $20,000. They have a party that night. And I heard one guy speak to this. They have a party at the house one night. It's a house. It's a party to rebuild a house. You look up the next day, 24 hours later, that house looks brand spanking new. And one of those Hispanic people is now a proud owner of a house.
Mm.
You know, one do the drywall, one do the brick land, one do the electrical, one do that. They put each other up. And all the while, we sit around looking back like, how are these people doing this? But they have a sense of unity. They have a sense of, I am my brother's keeper. I am the one to help my brother pull up so he can help pull me up. And we don't have that in the black community these days. That is something that we need to try to do. And a lot of times, it's not much that you need to do. But you just get a brother a positive word. You just get a brother a helping hand. You get a brother just the word of man, you can make it. I'm in the same situation. I appreciate what you're going through. Sometimes it's all it needs. You know, when you ask God for help, send me a sign. You don't know who that person might be. It might be you. It might be that brother down there and say, okay, brother, you can make it. Uh-oh, no, brother, that's not the right way to go. If we could just spark that in each other to sit there and, you know, be a light, be a support to one another, to have that unity, we can go much further than we can ever dream.
Wow. Okay. Look, man, I don't know where the time has gone, but we have Pastor Wally. Here we go again, down to about 5 minutes, man. Look, I don't want to let you go, but the show ends here in about 5 minutes. But Shelton, thank you, man. You have to promise to come back again sometime.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Pastor Wally, what about that now? Hold on, Pastor. I'm gonna come to you. Let me, Charles. Are we doing all right, Charles? Greatest Charles. What we get tonight, Charles? Are you there, bro, Charles?
Yeah, I'm here.
What kind of grade we get answering the question? How do you save a drowning man? Have we met the task, Charles?
You just can't give up on your brother, man. You gotta keep the unity together. I mean, that's the story. I mean, that's kind of what our ancestors and stuff. That's stuff we're taking from. You know, we got to relearn those type of qualities in life, and we can restore them. First thing we got to do is we got to acknowledge, and we kind of acknowledge it tonight. So I believe anything is possible.
Okay. All right. We're going to give you the next to the last word there, Pastor Wallace. Brother Sheldon, any last words, parting words before we leave tonight in about a minute or so here?
Well, I just want to say thank you for inviting me to your show. It's quite interesting and informative. I learned a lot from the brother speaking. We just need more unity, man. Hopefully we can do that. We can get to that point where we can pull each other up.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you for coming, and we have to have you come back again. That's Mr. Josiah Shelton. Background is BA in psychology and currently serves as a human service counselor there in the Chicago area. We appreciate you coming on tonight. Pastor Wallace, wrap us up. Give us a final word here before we got about 3.5 minutes before we get out of here, Pastor.
Hey, God bless you, my brother. Mr. Shelton, I appreciate you, brother, for tapping into the cause, man. You know, you could have been doing a lot of other things, but you decided to sit in with us tonight, and we just want to thank God for you. And for Brother Charles,
yes,
Brother Alton, I thank you all as well. You know, I firmly believe, Pastor Dockery, that when the word states something very clear and you're heading in the same direction, everyone in their own lane, he said, where there's two or three gathered together in his name, touching and agreeing
yes,
that
yes,
he would be in the midst of us. Now, we need him in the midst now. Now, see, when
yes,
we have him in
yes,
the midst, wherever we're heading, we're on the right road. But without him, we're just talking loud and saying nothing. But I believe tonight, glory to God, that we have assembled ourselves together and
yes,
something was accomplished that someone may be able to receive and take it with them. So just be encouraged until we meet again.
I believe you don't still put that on me, Pastor.
No, I didn't. Bless God.
Well,
amen.
Listen, audience, you've been listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. And we've been talking about, from the topic, how do you save a drowning man? And I hope you can archive the show later. And if you want to listen to it as an entirety, an hour and a half there. We'll be back Thursday night with another topic here on Talk Straight. I want to encourage you to go to our website, learn about what we're doing in terms of our national lecture series, which we're endeavoring to travel with, www.bfcinstitute.com. And there are many ways you can help us. Pastor Wallace's book is in our back store, Steel High. And every time you purchase one of those, you make a contribution to our nonprofit here. And we appreciate each and every one of you for listening in, and we encourage you to join us again for another episode of Talk Straight. Mr. Shelton, again, thank you, sir, and we look forward to having you come back with us again. We're going to end with Marvin Gaye. He's talked about a troubled man. Let it sweat me, babe.